Welcome to the Planning Board meeting, October 15th, 2025. The time is 6:30 p.m.
I would like to call the October 15th meeting of the Candia Planning Board to order. Please rise and
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
To adjourn.
Judy.
Present.
Mark.
Here.
Tim, here. Brian.
Here.
Dave.
Present.
Yeah.
And Linda.
Yeah.
And Kevin.
Yo.
Yo. There you go. Good answer.
In the house.
In the house.
In the house. So we have a fairly light agenda this evening. We have no old or new business, but we have Toshiba here to talk about the DocuWare scanning for our historical documents. And then we've got some town planning stuff, ordinance things to talk about. So that is about it. With that, I will turn it over to Jay Carey. I have no idea what your first name is, but go for it.
No worries. We go by Jim, John, but it is Joe. So I appreciate it. Nice to be with everybody tonight. I appreciate your time. Again, it's Joe Carey with Toshiba Business Solutions, based out of Salem, New Hampshire, so just down the road. I have a couple of associates with us as well. Kevin Denton, who is our pre-sale solutions architect. He's going to be the one providing a demo this evening on the DocuWare solution that we have in store for the town of Candia. And then also Eric Smithson, who is a senior solutions consultant that I work with on a daily basis on opportunities like this. So our goal is to provide an overview on DocuWare and show how we can improve efficiencies within the documents, not only storing them, but the documents that you may have already within the town of Candia down on the bottom floor, and how we can get those properly secured and easily accessible to all administrators within the town. So without further ado, if you don't mind, I'm going to hand it off to Kevin Denton and let him take away for a demo.
Sure. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Before I get started?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, and please, I'm going to go through probably 5-10 slides, and then we'll go right into a demo, but if there's any questions, I do want to make this like as interactive as possible, so please, you know, just speak up and join the chat, whatever it might be. So yeah, so we're Toshiba. The software we're going to show tonight is DocuWare, so a little bit about Toshiba DocuWare, the relationship. Toshiba, the software company, founded in Germany in 1988, so 40-plus years in the software industry, long time. There's over 1 million users of the software. It's in 20,000 different organizations. It's sold through 800 partners. We, Toshiba, are the largest reseller in North America. We're also the second largest user in North America. So we have, I believe you're evaluating some equipment or devices from us. We sell MFPs, we sell scanners, we sell software. All of our equipment and ordering and processing, leasing, administration, finance, all through a paperless DocuWare process. We also use it for payables, human resources, many different departments, but we quote-unquote eat our own dog food. We're 18 years plus the largest reseller in the continental U.S., and we have, I myself have been involved with over 250 implementations. We get to sit on the product advisory board for the products. We get to advocate directly with the developers of DocuWare for our customers, for like what they want in the future. The software is called an ECM platform, Enterprise Content Management. So if you have familiarity with this, over time it's kind of changed. I think where you folks might be starting out and where ECM platforms usually traditionally started out is we call it like where documents go to die. It's where something is at the end of a process and we scan it, we digitize it, we archive it. It goes into a system like DocuWare where we have secure access and audit trails. And really it's just about, you know, digitization. Where it's gone in the last probably 10 or 12 years is really more about like true document management. So the ability to integrate with like line of business software to make sure it meets our compliance needs, to really process and handle our records management. So it's not just about archiving it, but maintaining our chain of custody for compliance and destruction and retention policies. And then, you know, in the last 5 years, most of the focus for organizations is better on workflow automation. So not how do we digitize documents at the end of a process, but how do we keep them electronic from start to finish? So, you know, towns, villages, groups often will put like a PDF form on your website that people are still going to open up, download, print out, come to the office, pick up, fill in with a pen, submit via paper. That paper travels around the office. Or a lot of times we're seeing customers use email to manage these business processes, so, right? It's like I email it to Joe, Joe emails it to Eric, and then he emails it back to me. That's fine for
so,
some
so
things.
So, Kevin, just a point of, yeah, of clarity here, just a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing that what you're talking about is the fact that, like, not only would scanned documents be in this same data management structure, but also any other electronic documents that have been created would also be in that same hierarchical,
yep,
document management solution.
Correct.
All right.
So it's backfile conversion of getting everything digitized and archived, but it's also day forward for, you know, keeping things electronic start to finish, right? Yep. In all doc types. These are some of our more well-known, like, certifications, integrations, partnerships. Things that you folks would care about would be like the SOC2 standard for compliance, HIPAA compliance. GDPR is a European standard, but it's like the gold standard for privacy, basically, just so that you have an understanding of, again, the capabilities of the software. These are additional integrations and platforms that we've integrated with, really just to understand that wherever possible, we want to integrate with line of business applications, and that could be, you know, any sort of software that you may use where we might need to look up, let's say, a property ID or a property number and then get additional index or metadata about it, which we'll talk when we get into the demo. Some national references of big customers that use DocuWare, big organizations. These are some local references to your area, specifically in the New England area, of both large and small organizations that use DocuWare. And then, as you can imagine, the town and county governments is a very high use case for us. So these are not just customers that utilize DocuWare, but these are specifically Toshiba accounts that use DocuWare. And again, there's many, many areas. So, you know, the dream would be that we buy software like this and tomorrow we're paperless. But the reality is this gets implemented into single departments and processes one at a time. And so what you can see here is like a lot of government use cases would be like storage and retrieval, like storage and accessing records, but it can be used for FOIL requests or FOIA requests, inspection, code management, permits, licensing, case management, fire, EMS, GIS integrations, compliance requirements, you know, retention schedule management, all these different things. And so, you know, really how does it transform your government office? It can give you instant access to all of your records. Again, we have what's called full chain of custody and version control within the software, so we know not only when something was digitized, but who's accessed it, how they've accessed it. It's got high levels of security and retention, so we can build even state retention schedules right into the software. We do this a lot with towns and villages and even things down to like after-school programs, other services that you might offer, maybe to children, and the retention period is, you know, 7 years past the 18th birthday of the child, right? And so we have to have complex retention and schedules built into the application, and we can manage that. So the challenge a lot of companies face today, and organizations like yours, is that if someone asks you for a document, citizen, you know, FOIA request, whatever it might be, you know, minimally there's four silos. It's either paper that's kept in, you know, typically very expensive, four-drawer file cabinets. It's electronic files that sit on like window shares or folder shares. It's back-end documents that we generate, so maybe permits that we print, you know, documents that we generate, or it's email correspondence. Reality is it's probably a lot more than four silos. It's probably like 10 to 15 silos. So if someone's looking for information, it's spread out everywhere, right? And it's all in many different formats, many different places to go look for it. So the concept behind a system like this, again, is whether it's an email, a PDF, an office document, meaning Word, PowerPoint, Excel, scanned image, mobile capture. I'm sure as you've seen, people are now trying to capture things remotely with their phone. Our software has ways to assist in that. Web-based forms, electronic forms, and even print stream data. All that, no matter what the source is of the document, it all goes into one system, like one repository. It's a single point of search. It's integrated. It's cloud. It's web browser based. You can access it on your mobile phone, etc. Just as a quick example of like what does that mean? What are the things that we can do? Obviously, we can digitize everything, so we can get old records into the system searchable index, which we'll show. But how can we also change our processes going forward? So we can imagine things with DocuWare like having forms, and I'll show you this in our demo, like right off of our website, the ability for people to submit documents and populate documents right on our website, have it go through an internal workflow from clerk to technical evaluation to manager or council approval. A lot of towns start out with just digitization, but then quickly can move into things like voting on agendas and board meeting minutes, again, remotely using your cell phone, using a tablet. And there can be specific steps in any given workflow process where we can, you know, notify people of feedback. So when we talk about feedback, I often use the example of, you know, like someone might want to submit a FOIL request and they get an email notification that it's been submitted. Then they're going to get assigned someone internally to process it. It lets them know they're in process and they have, you know, the town has 48 hours to respond or 60 hours to respond or whatever it might be. We can continuously provide feedback in a workflow process.
Hey, Kevin, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can I just pause you there for a second?
Sure.
Is it just me? Like, I completely understand the value of a tool like this. This is way past our ability to even discuss from a town standpoint, isn't it?
Yeah, I think our yeah, just to let you guys know too, right? Our thing here, yeah, we're not the decision makers. You know, our point here is getting history and going forward on just the planning and zoning docs. Yeah, I would agree with you on that. That's just so you know, right? We're not going to be interested in a lot of those other, you know, web portal things or anything like that. It's really
okay.
Zoning and planning docs that we, you know, including stuff back to the 80s and going forward,
yeah.
So that it's all one seamless repository and hierarchy of searching.
Yeah, no problem. Again, the software is set up and built and organized uniquely for each customer. I'll show you that in the interface in a second. And if you can use it strictly just for digitization, you can use it just for digitization, and then you can start to add process to it. You can add forms, again, wherever you're comfortable. A lot of our customers, especially in municipalities, will just start out with what we would call storage and retrieval, like I talked about.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Region, but I mean, I do think that once
all the capabilities too, so to know that it's not just that and only that.
Yeah, but once we get something like this in place, Kevin, I think that we will find more ways to integrate. Like when apps come in, they just go right into this, right?
Yep.
So
yeah.
Megan's not making photocopies and sending them around. It's
right.
Going forward, this type of thing could...
Agreed. I just also understand the budget process. And if we say, yeah, it's going to be $60,000 a year, I can see them saying, yeah, not so much.
Yeah, no, I agree. We don't have the checkbook.
Or 200.
Not even close. Not even close. But don't worry. It's very, very inexpensive.
Okay.
Yes. So, again, solutions for teams of any size. Our systems start out as small as four users. So we have a lot of very small rural organizations, again, that utilize this just for digitization, just have a couple licenses for clerk and staff, whoever needs access to it. And then we've got larger towns, counties that can go, you know, as far wide as you want with it.
Okay, thanks.
But again, the challenge is we've got records everywhere. Now it's a centralized location where we're going to, if it's digitized, we're going to keep it here. It's overwhelming to administrate all these systems, and everything within DocuWare is single point, centrally operated, and can also, again, handle those workflows in the future. And then when it comes to security and compliance, you know, we check all those boxes, right? Like we're backed up, redundant. It's actually 3 times geo-redundant in the cloud. So even if like West Coast, Central, Eastern US, it's copied 3 times and it's backed up a full year. So any business process, but also any department. One thing that's very unique about Toshiba as a software reseller and a DocuWare reseller, most companies will, you know, come, they work with you to implement the system, they train your users and set it up with you, but then they'll say, here's the 800 number for DocuWare. And it's not that they don't provide great support, but they don't know you, the organization, how you're using it, what those file cabinets were set up for. So we are first-tier support for all of our customers. We have a help desk staffed right here in the U.S., and all of our customers call us directly for support. We end up closing 95% of our customer support tickets without ever escalating them up to DocuWare. And that's just, again, a testament to the fact that we have highly trained folks that are very familiar with our customers. Oftentimes, this is integrated, again, with like Toshiba devices or scanners, although we can work with anyone's hardware. So it's just a easier fit for us to really be that one point of contact for all of our clients. Okay. Any questions on that so far?
No.
All right. So a couple different things I'm going to show here. This is the DocuWare interface. So on the right-hand side of the screen, I've got a viewer. On the left-hand side, I have trays, searches, and task lists. Trays are like the trays that like sit on your desk. So today you might have a tray and someone might come drop a document in it, letting you know that there's like an invoice you need to look at or a document you need to process. And so many different ways to get documents into a tray. First and foremost, we can connect to email. So if you have like an email box that you might, oops, just logged out. Sorry, one second here. So if you have like an email box that you want to monitor or something like that, we can connect directly to an email box and have all incoming documents from that email coming into the system. I'm going to grab some invoices here as an example, but these could be scans, so you can walk up to a device and click a button that says DocuWare and then click a button that says invoices and hit scan. Again, you might have a button for property records, for tax rolls, again, whatever you're looking to digitize or archive. And when I have a document in the tray, it's also important to understand we can easily manipulate it. So, for example, I've got a document here. It's a couple pages, and maybe it's actually 2 files. I can click split, and I can break it apart into 2 documents. If I've made a mistake and I need to put that back together, I have the ability to staple, and I can staple it back together into a single document. The point of this is just to show you, you can manipulate paper the same way, the electronic file, the same way you can manipulate paper. Someone scans you a 7-page doc and you need to split it up, you can split it and you can staple it back together and you can rearrange it kind of however you like.
So if we were to scan historical documents in, it would go into a tray somewhere?
Yeah, it would go into a tray, and then we're going to pick a cabinet as the next step as to what file cabinet it's going to go into. Yep. And trays can be shared. They could be for a single person or they could be for like a whole department, depending on, again. Again, smaller organizations, they might be just a single person who's just scanning into their own tray and then storing them into a cabinet. But in this example, like if I click on these documents and I go to click store, you'll see I have a whole list of cabinets. And these will be cabinets just like you have filing cabinets today. So if it's a physical filing cabinet, it'll be a digital one in the future. And I'm going to show an example of one for like accounting, but you might have one again for inspections, for property records, for board meeting minutes and agendas, whatever it needs to be, right? So in this example, I've got an invoice. I'm going to put it into my accounting cabinet. And then I don't know if you noticed the color coding when the documents were in the tray there, but this is our AI machine learning that's built into the product. and you'll see that essentially it's gone through and it read the invoice and it extracted all of the key data that we're looking for. So this is where, again, how we customize the software. Normally, if you've got a filing cabinet, we set up these indexes on the left-hand side of the screen. For you, these might be like a property address or, again, a board type or an agenda type, a date. Whatever these fields are, we customize these for every cabinet that you want to keep and organize your documents. And again, in this example, it wants things like the invoice number, the total, the tax, the dollar amount. And it read these. Now, it's not magic how it does this. If it doesn't know something like an order number, I can just take my mouse and come over here and click on the order number. And then it fills it in over on the left-hand side for me. So again, like if it didn't know the invoice number, I could just click there and then come over here and click on the invoice number and it fills it in for me. So the AI is constantly learning by watching you just click on the documents. You don't have to use the AI. You can also just enter the information manually and create your own dropdowns. But obviously, it's very helpful in speeding things along in the capture of documents. But it's extracted all the data. And so I don't really have to enter anything. I can just validate that everything looks okay. I'm going to grab a couple more here.
So for us, that OCR and AI would be really important as far as scanning old documents, lot numbers
and
and dates. Right?
Yeah.
That could automate a decent percentage of the lift.
Could put our forms online too.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll show forms here in a second. But essentially I'm just storing these, so instead of having to do a lot of entry, once it's seen a couple documents and examples, it starts to extract all those values on its own. And I might just have to say, like, what type of document. This is a permit. This is a drawing. This is whatever, right? And so now, what does that look like when I search? Because, you know, we're talking a lot about indexes, and people think of things in terms of, typically, people think of things in terms of computers as folders, right? It's like, well, no, I expected I'd make a folder for property records and then a folder for a property and name it that, and then I would name that file the date dash the person's last name dash, right? All these different things. But now that we have indexes, we can search basically any way that we want. So I can say instead, I'd like to see all invoices from January 1st until today where the dollar amount was between $50 and $5 million, right? These types of searches you can't do in Windows folders. And you can do these with indexes. So basically I can search any way that I might want to access the criteria. And then what you'll probably like the most here is this field up here called full text. All documents that go into Document, regardless of format, even if they're images, drawings, CAD files, doesn't matter what the format is, all the text of all the documents become searchable. So for example, if I'm looking for Poland Springs and I can't remember where I bought Poland Springs from last, I can search, I can open the invoice, and then it'll actually take me right to the word and highlight it. So I've had lots of folks use this, and like, again, if you've got historical minutes and agendas in there, you could be talking about a project or a property, and we'll say, I don't know, have you ever, you know, done anything like this before? And you can search for a specific keyword or term, and it'll go through all your agendas and find any time that term or word was ever used, or that person was ever before the board, or whatever it might be. So between the indexes and the full text search, it's almost impossible to have a document go missing. So long as you know one word that's going to be on the document in a general time frame, you can find anything. People also often want to mark up documents. So I've got a toolbar here. So for example, I can put a note on the document if I like. I have a highlighter if I want, so I can highlight things. I can call things out. You can think of this like a transparency on the file. It can be turned on or off at any given time. So, and if I'm ever called to export this file, I can say in original format with or without annotations. Do I want to share our notes and annotations that we added to the document, or do I not want to? So you have full control over, again, the document and then also the annotations. You can also set it so people can search things but not annotate them. And when it comes to our security, again, just to give you an idea, like I said, we use the product ourselves. So, like Mr. Carey here can only see his own customers. Eric handles New England. He might see a few states, whereas I work in the Northeast, so I can see the whole Northeast United States. So we can limit access to documents, not only by cabinet, but specific types of documents within a cabinet. So again, you might have, and I'm just making things up, you might want to have someone who has access to drawings and technical information, but not tax information or other sort of property records. You can get extremely granular if you need to with permissions.
So Kevin, I have a question on annotations here. Do you keep a history who made the annotation or edited?
Yes.
Any of that? Okay.
So if we go into the history of the document, I can tell you how many times it's been opened, printed, annotated, stored. Everything is kept track of. How many times it's been downloaded. If it's an editable file, like a Word or an Excel file, we even keep every version every time it's been opened, saved, or changed.
All right. Thank you.
So another question.
Yeah, you said all formats, like even like DWG, IFCs, like that's a very broad term. So I would.
So not all formats. There's 300 different formats that the native viewer will view and open. You can put anything in Docura that's an electronic file. So you can put zip files in. You can put like DWG and CAD drawings. It'll open them in the viewer without having to use CAD.
Okay.
So, and other technical drawing types will, SFGs, all these other types of drawing files, they'll open and are viewable. If it's, you know, like, I have, like, manufacturers who zip up, like, machine instructions and upload them into Docura. It's just whether or not the viewer can view it. And it can view, like, 300-plus formats natively.
Right.
And if it can't view something, you can just download it and open it.
Okay, so I'm curious about the indexing. So you said you could preview it, but does it index the data in the file still, or is it just would it just be viewable?
No, if you download it out of the system, the index data stays in Docura. It doesn't go with the document.
I'm sorry, if I upload like a format like a DWG or something, you guys actually index the data in that file, correct?
Yes, okay. We can have the data, everything inside that file is searchable. Yes.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, so so that's kind of what we would call like the storage and retrieval part. I can search. There's all sorts of other things here like auto-rotate, deskew. Someone scans you a stack of 300 pages and you want it to literally go through and reorient every page up, you know, the right way up correctly. It'll do all these types of things for you. You can do redactions and things like that as well, and you can even burn them into a file, again, with version control. So we've got a version unredacted and a version redacted. All sorts of capabilities here. But then that'll take us into the next piece. I'll touch on this very briefly because it seems like workflow is not a huge thing, but just understanding, like, if this invoice needs to go through an approval process, then it can automatically assign to a person as a task. That's where I see tasks up here. And then we build custom workflows. So I could assign this invoice to somebody. I could request a new copy. I could reject it. Again, we custom build workflows. Nobody handles the same process. Like I'll use COIL again as an example. No two towns, villages, counties do it the same way. So we customize with our customers when workflows are a requirement. You know, just so you have the confidence in the future, its capabilities. We build these workflows with you. It's in a web-based designer, and we can use logic in our workflows to say, like, if it's over $10,000, it needs to go to an additional step, or if it meets a certain criteria. So here's an example of, like, when someone fills in a request for payment, it goes to an approval. If it's over 50, it needs a senior VP. If it's over 500, it needs the board. And then we notify the person at multiple steps along the way where it is in its process, or if it's rejected for any reason, we notify them via email, right? So just have an understanding, there is workflow. I can do things like assign an approver, have them pick a dollar amount. All the fields here, again, that you're seeing, these are all customizable, so I can ask different questions based on your process, whatever you want to do. Okay. And then that'll take us to forms. And for forms, I'll show you something we put together for another town recently, their specific challenge was that they wanted a system to kind of automate, again, FOIL requests. And so this is our web forms. And web forms are often a challenge for people, and I'll take you behind the curtains and show you something a little here why, is that, you know, what do we normally do? We have a form, so it's a PDF, we scan it, we make it electronic, and then we upload it on our website, right? And the real thing, though, the real challenge is when that form comes in, we would like it to be our paper form that we always use, right? And so this is an example of the customer gave me a paper form, and I take our web fields and map them to where it goes on that document. So I can fill it in electronically, but it still populates the same piece of paper, excuse me, that we've been using for years, and then it's going to enter into a workflow. So this is an example where I'm just going to put in some details. I can have drop-downs. I can have descriptions. I can freehand type. If I want to do wet signature capture, I can do wet signature capture. People can upload backup or upload details. I can submit the form. And then back in DocuWare, you'll see a workflow task just popped up. And it says, Kevin, you need to review and approve a FOIL request. And you can assign it to another person within the town and add comments, or you can reject it and say, we do not have any records like this. And again, it can automate that response back to the person who fills it in online. Now, not that people have become impatient and everybody wants everything electronic, so this is totally optional, but we do have a lot of towns and villages that have gone, I'll say, like, far and wide with this. So as an example here, just one of the things I thought I'd show, this is a small municipal town in New York that utilizes the software on their permits and applications page. So if you need, like, a picnic permit form to use a facility, again, the users don't know they're using DocuWare, but they're filling in everything electronically, and then that's going to go straight to the clerk, who's then going to be able to process it and have a quicker turnaround time. Same thing, let's go back here. Same thing goes for really almost any process, right? Like marriage license requests, community center rental agreements, whatever it might be. They're able to just process and do these forms electronically. And for those who want to get really advanced, a lot of people will say that you still have to come into the town for payment or processing, especially if you only accept cash. Oops, sorry. But some of our customers have even gone ahead and integrated it with, like, their payment portals so that it redirects to, you know, like Stripe or some other service where they can then go pay if they want to. Yeah, and so, again, it's just important to understand that we can take a paper document that you've been using for 20 years. We can give you a web-based form that's right on your website. The users don't know they're using DocuWare. They just think they're filling in an electronic form. It still populates that piece of paper. It can go through an internal process, and then we can have that full audit trail and record of when it came in, who processed it, what was updated, what was added. And that stops us from having to do these backfile scanning projects at the end of a process. We can really keep them electronic, you know, from start to finish. So that's probably a lot, and that's probably enough. Again, the dream is we buy software like this, and tomorrow we're paperless. The reality is this starts off very small and departmentally, and again, like you've already said, typically this can start off with just digitization. So it's like, great, what we really want to accomplish is we've got these three types of records that we want to start archiving. Again, we come in with you. We customize the software. We customize your index sets. There's a project manager that you meet with weekly. They develop the software. They let you test it. You come back and say, I like this. I didn't like this. We set a go live date. Typically, this is like 60 days from the time of purchase. So you buy it. Within 60 to 90 days, you're using it. You can start your archiving. A lot of towns and villages I've worked with also use this as a way to do like job fair and job training for other citizens and programs. We also offer digitization services. So if you say this is overwhelming and we don't want to do this, but we've got this whole room can you give us a price to come in and say, what would it cost for you to digitize this? We do those services as well. So we can basically aid you at any point in the journey. And then, like I said, our systems are start as small as a 4-user system, way less expensive, and we can get you pricing. And we also have, again, contract agreements like Omnia pricing and Region 4 pricing that allow you to basically work off a consortium. So it's you know, not to exceed a specific cost, and it's available for all municipalities.
Great. I had another question. So let's say we accept a set of plans, and so that gets filed off. What happens if we receive a revision to that plan? Is there a way to, like, relate that to something other than stapling?
There's multiple ways, and again, this depends on how people want to do things. So right now I've got this document that's been stored, and maybe someone sends me a new version of this. So let's pretend that this is my new version that's sitting in my tray here. So what I can do is I can say I'd like to clip, and then I can put that before or after the current version that I have and keep them together, right? So basically I could say, no, this is the new version, and I want it to go in front of that, and I could say clip. Now, if anyone goes and opens it, they'll see that this has been clipped and that there's two files here, actually, not just one. Some folks don't like to keep them together. They like to store it as a whole new document, and then you basically have two versions. So let's take this to, like, property files. You might have a technical drawing, and one is dated that it was received on 10/14, and then another one was brought in, and it was received on 10/15. And if you do a search, you'll see two, and you'll see each have their own individual dates. Or, like I said, some people like to clip them together so that I just know that this one is the replacement for this. That's totally optional, however you want to configure it, but we can do both ways.
Thank you.
I like the fact that it manages all documents, right? Because we do have a lot of stuff in electronic in the more recent years, and then a lot of stuff historically archived in paper.
I have a question, Ron.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kevin, quick question for you. If we were to do this ourselves, which we probably wouldn't, but walk us through the mechanics of this. Say we have a high school kid that comes in for 2 hours after school until the job's done, and he's got big boxes full of manila envelopes, full of different kinds of documents. What's it look like?
Paper.
Does he put them in a bin that just automatically scans them? And then you sort them on the back end?
So a couple different options. Some of our customers will utilize their device, like the actual, you know, copier, MFP. Depends on where the records are and how they're kept. Some people like to buy scanners because they're more portable, like a desktop scanner. We offer those as well. So I'll speak to both. One is, yes, they get a stack of records on a cart. They walk over, they drag the cart over to the Toshiba device. They open up a file. They burst all the staples. They click DocuWare. They click property records. They put all the documents in the feeder and hit scan. And they scan. Maybe they scan 10, 15 different files, right? Then they come back into their tray and they click them one at a time. And I'm just going to grab a bunch of these here. So I just scanned 5 different stacks, and I come back to my tray and I've got 5 different stacks. And then I pick where I want it to go. And then I say, here's where I want it to go. And then I, you know, basically pick my indexing again, either by selecting information right off the document or entering it or pulling it from a drop down. Etc. Whatever we've pre-configured, right? If it's more mobile, then someone can basically take a laptop and a scanner, put that on a cart, and they can be back in the records department, again, providing you get the Wi-Fi, and they're just scanning, storing, scanning, storing. People like to get into flows, and we don't stop you. We don't basically make you say, well, now you've scanned it, you have to swivel chair over to DocuWare and store it. you have the ability to just scan, 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 and then go sit back at your desk and archive, archive, archive. There's also connectors for Outlook. So I don't know if you guys use Outlook or Office 365, but you can have a button where you can store to Docuware. So if you've got incoming correspondence with folks, you can write from Outlook, store things into Docuware. So you've got records of all those emails and correspondence without having to print them out. But yes, it's going to be basically, you know, the student and intern, whoever, just kind of scanning and archiving and then going back and digitizing. Now, for certain types of records, if you've got what I'll call data on them, and I'll give you examples from like here in New York is like, and I'm sorry, I'm from New York, but we have SBL numbers, which are like property identification records. And then we have a database provided by the state that has all the property information on it, the address, the number, the numerical address, direction, street name, post direction, zip code, whatever. And so we can integrate Docuware with systems like that so that we can generate a cover page with a property ID on it. And literally someone slaps the cover page with the property ID on the file, they scan it, and they don't have to do any of the indexing and storing. They come back and it's already stored in Docuware. And then we look up from the state system by the property ID all the other values that we want to capture. So I can't speak to exactly what your process would look like, but we try to automate it, again, wherever possible and however possible. And so sometimes you've got really clean records. Sometimes it's all handwriting and someone's got to key it in, you know. But realistically, it's just going to be a person processing and storing files.
I've never seen our basement, but I have a picture in my mind.
It's probably pretty accurate.
of file cabinets
yeah,
like to say 1983,
helped,
right?
That's it, but you'll lucky if you get a file cabinet.
So if there's a drawer that says 1983, it's got just a bunch of stuff, and it will have odd size, like, drawing, plot plan, like...
Right. A lot of that is just laying on shelves.
16 by 24, odd-sized documents?
Drawings are a different piece. So, yeah, I mean, all the devices and the Kodak devices will basically do up to 11 by 17 or 8.5 by 11, all those different sizes and down. Once you get into drawings, we have a couple options. And this depends. Some of our larger towns and villages will buy the... they're called KIP units or HP plotter units that have scanners on them so that you can scan your drawings. Or you can basically take those drawings to a service and have them scanned and digitized and then stored into Docuware. Or again, like I said, we offer services that will come and do it, where basically we can box them up and pack them. And then for day forward stuff, you can just make it so that it's required that when somebody is submitting a plan or a drawing, it has to be in digital format. Again, we can give you forms on your website, or you can just have them give you a thumb drive. And either way, you can store those in Docuware electronic, you know, starting out. I'll always say the one of the questions or one of the things we come up against is, what is it worth digitizing? Because there's labor involved, right? And so, like, there's time and money spent on having someone take the time to archive and scan this stuff. So what is of the value the most is what are we the most at risk about, right? It's like, where do we have maybe things not fireproof safes? Where do we have historical records that are extremely valuable and they're not backed up and they're susceptible to fire, flood, you know? We've had Onondaga County is a really, really large county here in New York, and they had software like this, but they weren't doing a super fast job of digitization. And there was a sprinkler malfunction, and it flooded their records room and all their vital statistics. All their birth, marriage, and death records were pretty much destroyed. Oh. They had to rebuild them from scratch. Cost them millions of dollars. So that's when it became a priority, right? So not everything will always be in Docuware. There will be plenty of things that still always exist in paper or whatever else. But whatever's most critical is where I always advise you start first.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, great. And we're available for questions. I think we're going to have Eric follow up with pricing and other details, but thank you for the time. We really appreciate it.
Take care.
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, guys.
So, you know, again, we don't get to make a decision, but
right.
just good to have
we're gathering information, which is the whole day forward thing being digital makes a huge amount of sense.
Yeah. Just well, again, we have a lot of recent history is digital. We have plans digitally and everything else now recently. Mm-hmm. So we're cool. Good there. And that's where the mixed format's also important, right? So we're seamless going back. But
a lot of this really would pertain more to some of the other departments in the town. Right.
Yeah.
Like when you're going to pay bills instead of having a voucher.
Tax stuff. Yeah.
Well, and the routing flow is helpful for that too, you know. But even with us, I think it's, you know, I could see us having forms for our type of thing online mm-hmm. for people to be able to just fill them out, building permits.
Do we leave?
Whatever.
No,
they're gone. They're done.
I thought he was doing pricing.
He said he's going to get a
follow-up. Follow-up on pricing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's the real discussion, right?
Yeah.
Well, and the real discussion, the real expensive part is going to be the labor to get this done.
Correct.
Well,
that's true, yeah.
That's where the money's going
to be. One thing Kevin pointed out.
That's the unknown. We don't know.
Right. One thing Kevin pointed out, though, is if you make a decision on what is critical to be scanned and stuff that you can roll the dice on and just say, we'll live with the file cabinet, right?
Right.
Yeah, prioritize what you need.
Right.
Yeah. And that's probably going to be, I would have to imagine that the cost of that is going to be something town's going to have to do over a number of years. Mm-hmm. Right. We're not going to pay these guys to come in and digitize every freaking document in the town in 1 year.
No.
Because
you'd want to do deeds first.
Yeah.
Really.
My only concern.
So we don't have a fire again.
Yeah.
My only concern is that once you go with something like this, granted, what we have isn't great, but once you go with something like this, all your data gets up there, and you got to pay for it to keep it up there. I mean, with the GDPR stuff, I believe you can ask for it, so they can give it to you, but you lose, you know, the search, you lose all that functionality and stuff, so it's kind of just like this big...
Yeah, the whole software as a service cloud storage thing.
Yeah.
Storage is so cheap now.
Forever.
You know.
But you're getting the storage through them, so... Yeah,
I don't know what the...
Yeah, so it's...
That's all stuff that...
And the price doesn't go down.
No.
Never.
No, it does not.
Could definitely see, like, you know, like this would be... Could be really useful for the whole town, right? All departments, and then... But... Kicking it off, and
but the one thing that we're going to add, we're going to spike some costs on is scanning plans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That ain't going to be cheap. Right.
Yeah, the plot plans.
And that may be probably our most important documents is plans.
Well, just kind of like Kevin's idea, you know, you just have a high school kid scan it all and just dump it into Megan's mailbox.
She gets to categorize it.
But it would be interesting to see, you know, one of the things that we got to see once it gets into is that, you know, character recognition, the OCR functionality of how much of that could be just pull it up. Yeah, that's right. Pull it up. Yep, that's right.
Yep.
Well, the thing is, like he said, either you're going to buy the equipment or you're going to rent them to come in and do it. What's cheaper?
Well, this has all come about because the town is looking at getting new Toshiba copiers.
Mm-hmm.
So the copier would have...
Right, but we'd have to have a copier that could do a whole plan.
Right, but we can't do that. Yeah, that's
they said they couldn't do that anyway. Right. They have to service it out.
Anything over
11 by 17.
Anything over legal size has got to be done by somebody else.
And which a lot of our old plans are.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you could get an HP plotter that has...
But I think he said they did that as a service bureau.
Yeah, they do.
So, like I said, like I'm going to say, as soon as you buy that piece of equipment, it's obsolete.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh, that's why you rent.
So that's why you rent, and you pay them to do it.
Yeah. No, exactly right. Yeah.
Out of curiosity, is the town going with them for copiers?
I believe so.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Okay.
So that was
motion to adjourn?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Tonight. That was a lot of info.
It was interesting. Yeah. It was good. You know, so
most of it I already heard. It was the same thing as the presentation.
So anyway, the next thing on the agenda is approval of the meeting minutes for October 1st.
I read it. I didn't have a problem with anything.
Oh, everything looked good.
Motion to accept.
Second.
Okay. So, Judy.
Yes.
Mark.
Abstain.
Abstain, not here. That's right. Tim, yes. Brian.
Yes.
Dave.
Yes.
Linda.
Yes.
And Kevin.
Yes.
All right. So now, the only other thing we want to talk about, and we're gonna limit some time here. Let's talk about the two easier things first. You have a couple of documents here. These were what I did basically was just take our comments from the last meeting about, you know, regulation changes and the zoning changes for March and kind of made some notes. Okay. So you've got one with blue wording on the bottom there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So this is the lighting ordinance in the lighting section of the major subdivision. And, you know, we had talked about trying to keep lighting, especially in residential areas, to a minimum and possibly using motion sensors. So I just purely just added two sections at the bottom. In residential districts, lighting should be kept to a minimum and in character of the surrounding properties.
Mm-hmm.
And then motion sensor lighting should be used where appropriate and safe in all districts.
Mm-hmm. And did you want to have the encourage? I put encourage yellow lighting. It helps preserve nighttime pollinators. Did you have it?
I don't have that, but I think I thought I saw somewhere in here. I thought there was something about color, but no.
Yeah. Color rendering index.
Color rendering index.
And I like the specific that it's yellow light and it's nighttime pollinators. You have more pollinators at night and we need our pollinators.
Okay.
And just so you know, your F isn't blue.
I know what it is.
It's not effing blue.
No. It's what? We always had the old HPS lighting, which was orange, and everybody hated it and wanted to go to the LED light.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, people view yellow as dingy.
Mm. Yeah, that's so.
Of course, right now it could have been.
Yellowish color.
You remember when cars in the 60s had those yellow headlights?
I bet they've made improvements, though, lately in the yellow.
It is more difficult to see with the yellow, though.
Yeah. But I suppose you can have different intensities, and they've probably ramped it up.
But see, that would be the thing
I just bought new LED yellows.
Yeah. I wonder if LED yellows are different than the specific bug lights, which I got at Home Depot.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I went. We've had those before, and...
Right. And again, it would be the purpose. What are you lighting for? And maybe go into the motion. Anything to dark skies would be nice.
Yeah.
Well, we do kind of say no. We do say no going on to
other properties.
Other properties, yeah. So what is this thing specifically?
And I know when I go down Merrill Road and right at the curve there at North Road, whoever has that light over their garage, it's almost like blinding. I have to be careful when I make the curve to... Make my left turn.
Yeah.
Right, I know. It's like, you don't want to wreck your night vision.
I think we want to. Personally, I think we should put a yellow lighting preferred, but for like non essential or something like that, because certainly in
definitely
you the visibility in a yellow.
Right, you want good visibility. Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yellow lighting does not give you the visibility.
Right, but I like the idea that we're even.
There is a color, like LEDs. Usually have a three-way switch that lets you opt for the color intensity, brightness of the light. Like
temperature.
There's a warm temperature, right?
Yeah, specifically, if you care about my opinion, I specifically would like to see the encouragement of yellow bug lights to protect our nighttime pollinators. I want people to be aware that there is a choice they can make. Before we all crash and burn.
We're going to crash and burn.
You know, so I want to go down knowing I did my best.
Well, it's only happened 7 times.
So would that be encouraged, like, for the homes that the builder is actually building, not in other areas, unless it's a common area
for lighting? You know, I just want everybody to consider it. But, yeah, I mean, if around your house, let's say, you just, maybe you left a porch light on all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be a yellow light.
We can't regulate that.
I know. It's not about regulating. It's about encouraging.
Well, I was just going to say the word encourage, we encourage, you know.
I know.
Throw something encouraged along the line. Because we say, what did you say? Appropriate, where appropriate.
And safe.
And safe. But it, you know, we encourage lighting.
Right, that's
that
right.
That's something the Conservation Commission can put out.
Yeah.
Right, but we're just some advisory.
With us, we're more lumens, how many lumens you put in.
Yeah, and I'm not comfortable with adding about pollinators because nowhere in here do we talk.
Right.
But, you know,
but that's something good that the Conservation Commission, hey, you know, think about dark sky, think about
pollinators. Right, but who are we talking to then?
You could always have something added into a form saying...
And what form is it that the people are going to see when they're putting the lighting on their house?
Their plants.
But, I mean, when do they have their plants?
No, I'm saying if we go to the system like we just saw, and we can add something into the form.
Okay, but that isn't happening right now, and
no.
I think this might be happening sooner than that. But I like your idea.
Yeah, but, I mean, the problem with this is only going to apply, I mean, the situation, this is only going to apply to development.
Right, and developments have to consider all the different materials, like what kind of insulation, what kind of windows, what kind of lighting.
Yeah, no, I get it. But
I mean, how hard is it to add one little line at the bottom that says, oh, we encourage yellow lighting because it protects nighttime pollinators. We're not saying anything but in educating them.
I hear you. We all hear you.
Yep.
We all understand. I don't think it's appropriate to include myself.
Yeah, I don't either.
Whatever.
And I'm all for it, but I can't see us mandating that as part of a builder's plan.
Like I can understand you need so many lumens or something in a common area or something like that for the back. Not that I disagree with you.
Totally.
Because I get tons of pollinators and I love them. However... To mandate it in the development, I don't think.
It's hard because, like, even E and F, like, that's extremely, it's extremely...
It's vague.
It's vague and it's unenforceable.
Correct.
Well, I mean, whoever, I say unenforceable. This board could vote today very differently than next year's board could vote.
But one of the reasons I felt these two items were kind of important was that we've had people come in here and ask for lighting variances.
Oh, yeah,
right.
We've had these discussions.
So
every application.
Right. So I think it's important that we put these two pieces in here.
Yes.
So that we let developers know we don't want a lot of light.
Yeah.
Yep. No. I agree. It's just it's
right.
Not black and white and.
You're right too. Like, we could be here today being like, yeah, you know what? We don't want all those lights. And 20 years from now, they could be like, no, can you put more lights in?
Yeah, and that's when
and
we
rewrite
it.
That's fine, but
that's why
we're saying it should be kept to a minimum, keep in character with the town and the neighborhood, right?
We're updating our ordinances as we speak. So, from the past, that's
right.
What you do. You reevaluate.
Yeah, so, you know, we don't need to... We're going to have a meeting where we specifically talk about all these in a public hearing so people can vote, you know, but I don't know if those two are okay.
I like them.
They're fine with me. Put them forward, and then we can see what the town's for.
This doesn't go to the town. This is
No, I mean, won't we have a public meeting?
We have a public hearing, yeah. The next one up, trying to do the easy ones. We had said that if ADUs are going to be part of a subdivision, that we want
to know
about that
when
they apply. So what I had Megan do was just print out sections 403 through 405. These are the information required on the plan. And I thought that that in 403, adding section X to saying that if ADUs are, you know, to be part of the subdivision, that they, that the details need to be provided with the application. Or do we want to put it there? Do we want to make it in, like, additional information required? We see a copy of state and federal drainage analysis or all that stuff. I think that our best bet is to put something to that effect in.
The thing is, the builder of the development won't include an ADU with every unit. And
correct.
Typically, they're spec houses, and then the purchaser of the house would then say, "I want to opt for an ADU." So it wouldn't be possible to include it in the.
But what we want to do is, if he's planning on doing it as part of the development, we want to know about it. Yes, there's nothing we can do once he sells the house.
Right.
Okay. Right. Once the house is sold,
the owner can do what they want.
The horse is out of the barn.
Right.
But what I don't want, and you know, Diamond Hill kind of broached that with us, that he's looking at doing a model home with an ADU or two. It's like, ooh, you know, if you're planning on doing it as part of the development, we want to know.
I agree.
I didn't hear that.
How many?
I hadn't heard that one either.
I'm like, oh boy.
That's a new one to me.
Well, he was in here talking about it at a meeting one time, wasn't he?
I don't remember him saying
it. Is that Tallarico? I'm sorry, Tallarico or the other guy? Kevin.
Kevin Landry or Kevin Billy?
Yeah. So I'm just saying, it just kind of, it's not a given. He was just thinking about it. And so my take is, let's get that for the future so we don't run into a problem. And if it's
double and triple.
Right, if it's only, you know, six houses.
Yeah, that's a simple answer. He's going to say, yes, I am, or no, I'm not. It's not in my plan.
Correct, and if it's not in his plan, then he can't build it with the development.
Exactly.
In the development,
yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
But if he said, I'm going to spec all of the septic systems to support an ADU, yeah, he could do that.
He
could
do that.
He can do that, yeah.
That's kind of what we're looking
but
for.
But again, I think we want to know that
we would want to know that. Right.
Because
right.
That impacts traffic, schools, everything else, not to mention sewer and water, right?
Right.
So I hadn't come up with the verbiage yet, but I thought that was the appropriate place to put it in the filing documents and just state that if ADUs are built as part of this subdivision, it needs to be included in the application with details. Now, they're not going to say, you know, yes, they're all going to have ADUs, but if he's going to build an ADU, we want to know about it beforehand before we
with
approve
the appropriate
it.
Details.
Yeah. Makes sense.
That all makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Are those going to be custom homes, or is he building spec homes, you know?
I don't know. Well, he's building a model home, so I don't, that's like all I know. It's in his, of course, he's still waiting on
stuff.
DES.
You know, they got already one of their permits for the dredging and the filling for the wetlands. That's been approved. I checked that today. I don't know what other approvals they had. That was from the coastal wetlands. The only thing I have a question of, we'll talk about it at another time, is there's a spring, and I looked up that, researched that a little bit more, and they can do a little bit different than dredging and mitigating if, because it's a natural spring that I don't know exactly. There are three or four vernal pools that are on the plans, and some of the plans are marked in red, so I don't know if that's the ones he plans on dredging and mitigating. Oh. And the plans for DES do not show any of the plans on where he wants to do it.
Huh. Yeah.
So
is the spring running now?
It's running now. It's full. Yeah,
it's,
that's
it's
why
still
it's
still running.
Yeah, that's
okay,
why it's
so
a spring.
That's a legit. Well,
it's not a vernal pool because
right.
The vernal
like Ryan's got a spring on his property, but it dries up and
dries up.
Right.
No, this is still going, and it always has. I mean, our spring is dried up, but this one has not dried up.
Wow, it's impressive.
That is impressive.
Very.
And I don't want to, I would rather, and that's going to be right where the road's going. So
oil.
I'd be over there looking to see where the spring
is. I don't know
whether
DES actually went there to take a look or just looked at the plans. I did send a complaint letter to Eileen Robichaud, I think her name is, and asked her to come out and take a look.
Good.
Oh, good. Yeah, because I mean,
that's a pretty special thing.
Yeah. It can be,
well, and especially with the drought.
Right.
Yeah, it can be, it can still exist. They just have to do it in a different way than they would do with the vernal pool and the wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
It just has to be processed in a different way.
Okay, well, good. Keep it. That's good. Because I didn't know there was a spring on there. I never heard that from.
Nope. No. He didn't, probably didn't know it.
Yeah.
Well,
because when I was up there was so much water rushing down that hill. You couldn't tell a spring from anything. It was just water.
Yeah. Okay. So the last page is the solar energy system.
Oh, yeah.
And what I did was, there's a Stantec thing in here too, a review they did. But what I did was I had misplaced this document, so I didn't look at that, but I looked at the energy foundation or whatever it is, their template. I looked at the towns that we had and looked at our conversations, and I picked stuff that I thought kind of got to the points that we wanted to get to, but we're a long way from getting this fleshed out, so I just kind of wanted to go through this again, and it's in no particular order per se. But, you know, I think the template form from the Energy Foundation there had a nice table, which I think we're going to need for this type of stuff, right?
Yeah. It's easier to see.
Right. Because, you know, we've got, and I have not found a good definition of accessory use solar in any of these docs. I'm going to keep looking, but they just talk about accessory use without really defining what it is. But for now, let's just consider accessory use, somebody putting a solar panel on the roof of the house to power their house and
I kind of think
heat their pool.
Heat their pool, do some load balancing, you know.
Yeah. Well,
right.
If you have a barn and that's an accessory dwelling.
Yeah,
and using it just using solar panels just on that accessory dwelling.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is, let's say you've got a big horse barn. Well, or an old cow barn like that one up on the hill there on New Boston Road that's just huge.
Oh, yeah.
And you plaster the top of that thing with solar panels. Okay, you know, is that an accessory use now, or are they actually a generation station? You know, because they're generating a lot more power than the house can handle, right? And I'm not...
Well, any of those will do that. Because they sell back us.
Yeah, they sell load balancing. But you understand what I'm saying, Mark. You know, I'm saying a commercial versus...
Right, commercial I'd like to see just in the commercial area. And I wouldn't put that out in the residential.
How big of a problem is that for Eversource?
It becomes a problem when they're over-generating and, like, you have a new plant or something like that, and it's got X amount.
Yeah.
Who are you dumping? You're not able to really switch off all these independents.
Right.
Right? So then they dump, but then there becomes an issue with the new plants.
Which is cheaper energy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so the thing is that, to me, the accessory use, let's just consider that residential household, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that would be like a building permit across all the zones, right? Mid to large scale, and I put question marks because at first I was like, well, we'll just do that in mixed use, you know, commercial and industrial, right? Mm-hmm. And I missed commercial, whatever. Anyway, and I was going to...
in the industrial? Where they'd have to come in and get a special permit.
Yeah, and then we could do either conditional use or special exemption.
Special exception, yeah.
I would think that'd be better, a special exception, because then you don't have the... if it burns down, you have to reapply and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with mixed use. But my question is, and maybe we do it in wording, but my question is, in the residential district, do we want to allow mid to large scale? And my first reaction was no.
No. You see other towns starting to do that.
Yeah.
And now you got this beautiful field that they used to hay and all that, and you see wildlife and all that. Now it's a big solar farm. You know?
Yeah, that was my first reaction.
I think a lot of the people in town wouldn't be for it anyway.
No.
You know, where you're taking away from the beauty of the town.
Well, I think the clean energy that webinar that we saw, they were discouraging that. Is prime fine land being used for solar fields?
Right.
So yeah, I would say I know.
Yeah, that was my first response too. I just wanted to, you know, I didn't want to put that down on paper without seeing how everybody else felt. I mean, again, part of me is like, hey, listen, if someone's got some fields out back that aren't visible from the road, and they wanted to put some solar panels, some significant solar panels in, but the problem is, I don't know how you legislate that well.
Because
still
then,
not.
Then you've got to run the power lines to it, right? Now you're cutting huge swaths. Either we're going underground or,
Yeah. So
there's a lot to it.
Let's leave it as no. That was my first response to, and I was thinking special exceptions there as well.
And I'm kind of, on the mixed use, I'm kind of like on it. You know, I can see industrial, keep it down in our industrial areas, but...
Well, industrial or commercial, because...
Yeah, industrial, commercial area.
Because in town, where is the industrial area?
No, it's out.
Like, is 27, is commercial?
43, 27.
Yeah.
Like going past Mobile, is that industrial or commercial?
Not far.
I think a piece of it is light industrial.
I think a piece of it's light industrial.
I think down by Becker's, just shortly after that, doesn't it?
I think that's turns into industrial.
So where Becker is and where Rusty Rex is and Contel.
I think that's been in
there. Is there a map in here?
No.
No, it is online though.
Yeah.
It shows the industrial. Zones.
But yeah, there's a couple of them there and there. There's industrial.
Up by Exit 3A, I think, might be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the commercial is all down through. And so I'm good with commercial. I hadn't thought much about mixed use.
Mixed use is like the center of town area, the four corners. Right?
Yeah, basically we should look at the map and decide.
Yeah.
That's
why I was kind of like, but if we wanted to put the solar panels up in the schoolyard, I guess you could.
Well, but again, it depends on how we define it.
Yeah.
Accessory use, too, right? You know, for the school, solar panels could be an accessory use.
Mm. If they're on the roof, yeah.
Right.
Put them up on the roof.
Yeah. So that's the thing there, right? The accessory use would be permitted everywhere. We just need to come up with that definition somehow. I think. Mm. Right. If we start talking first about the freestanding solar panels, they are considered a structure and shall comply with building setback requirements and lot lines and wetland setbacks. I don't think anybody should have a problem with that one. It's good. This one was somebody put on, and I thought it was... pretty good. Solar panels systems shall constitute impervious coverage for the purpose of calculating lot coverage. Right, you can only have a certain percentage of your lot
impervious.
Covered.
Yeah, that
impervious,
makes sense.
Right?
Yep.
So I think that's a fair one. And then I tied with that, any vegetative under the solar panels shall not constitute impervious surfaces, but drainage of runoff from the panels must be addressed in the design.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you be double counting that area then?
Well, no, there's two different calculations, right? One is for your lot coverage,
just for, you know, you can only have whatever percent of your lot be impervious.
Okay.
Right. So that would mean, like, let's say somebody had 20% of the lot already between house, woodshed, garage, and asphalt and a big, huge horse barn. They were at 20%. And let's say it's only 20% that's allowed. I can't remember the exact percentage. Now they put in a big solar field.
Right.
That
puts them over.
Puts them over.
Yeah, because they can always have the option to put it on the roof.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's not delineating anybody's right to do it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just...
But I don't understand, the vegetation under it will not constitute impervious. So
for... Will
land... land use itself.
Yeah, I should have. Will not constitute. I did not put the for drainage. You know,
yeah,
for
it's going to be for the drainage.
For the drainage.
And is the word vegetation instead of vegetative?
It is. There's a few errors here.
No, that's actually words I got from in three out of the five I looked at.
Very weird.
It is. I was
vegetative.
Like vegetative.
Yeah, any
okay.
vegetation.
The two teachers are saying it's weird.
It's
not the right place.
I mean, I'll put whatever in there. I just was stealing other people's words.
Maybe they were wrong.
I know.
Right, you know, it's just, yeah, I'm not saying they're right.
Yeah.
Stop me in my tracks.
It doesn't
I'll change
any.
It, but like I said, I was stealing it from at least two or three other places where vegetative.
And you can see vegetative
state
covers, whatever.
Yeah,
something.
Yeah, you have to just.
Anyway,
it's an adjective.
It was an attorney who came up with it.
Yeah exactly.
Right.
He gets bonus money for making up new words.
Right.
So anyway, so the if it's vegetation under the solar panels, it will not constitute impervious surfaces, but the drainage has to account for the runoff. Right, so it's not like saying the entire area has been paved and you have to account for drainage for a paved area.
Right.
Is there any way that we can reword that so...
Oh, no,
it
I'm slaved over this.
I know, but like
very
Kevin said, it is, you know, any vegetation... Proper drainage or runoff from the panels.
So what I should say, is more like it. If the land under the solar panels is covered with vegetation, then the solar panels shall not constitute impervious surface for drainage calculations.
Oh,
but proper drainage of runoff from the panels must be addressed in the design.
Yes, that's
Does that
better.
Make sense now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
That's what I was trying to say. I guess
okay,
I
see.
Yep,
that's why
it.
I was saying. So they're impervious unless there is vegetation under them.
Right.
Right.
And then they're not impervious.
Correct.
Assuming that the drainage is handled correctly.
Correct.
I love it.
Okay. Except that for that coverage of the lot.
Right.
That, for the purpose of calculating
lot coverage.
Right. Again, we in residential districts, we limit the amount of the lot that can be cover that can be impervious. And I'm not saying I'm standing by this. I'm just saying this is what a few other towns have done. We can take that out if we don't really care.
So instead of it qualifying for lot coverage, its definition would be just for drainage and runoff. So the underneath the panels, the purpose is not wanting to know that. That it would be mainly for just the drainage, not for lot coverage. It's like, what is the purpose of impervious coverage was for lot coverage, calculating lot coverage. What does this qualify it as? Just
it would be just vegetated land. Yeah, it would just be like grass, right? If there's a whole bunch of grass underneath your
solar panels,
right? That's not an impervious soil because you haven't covered the soil. Right? So soil is absorbing the runoff from the panels.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm trying to delineate between the lot coverage impervious surface and the purpose of it looking underneath vegetation as being the purpose for not really calculating that is for runoff.
Well, I can look at, I stole this language. Let me look at in our ordinance a little closer and see if I can find a way not to use the term impervious.
Impervious, yeah,
on
twice.
On the lot coverage.
Or...
Yeah.
Because the lot really existed before they put the panels up.
Yeah.
So our concern with the existing lot really isn't an issue.
Right, and again...
We're concerned about where the panels are going.
Everything in here pretty much is stolen.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine. Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah. But did you steal from stupid people?
You sat right...
I'm
not
right
concerned
person.
With what the lot had on the floor. They'd want to put panels up.
As a wise man once told me, never argue with stupid people.
Exactly.
They will bring you down to their level and beat you with experience. So, you know, and again, I put this in there because it was on a couple of places.
Yeah.
So I just, do we want to, again, painting that picture of you've got someone in a residential district who's got his maximum square footage that he can have as structures and impervious surfaces. Do we want to say that if you want to put solar panels in, you know, you're over your limit as far as structures and impervious surface on your lot? That's what the intent of that first line is.
Ooh.
Right.
Right? Right.
Ooh. You know, I don't remember what the exact number is, but you can only have 20% of the lot covered. You've got 20% of the lot in buildings now. You want to put in another 30% of solar panels. Do we want to count those as structures for
freestanding? Yes. Yeah, you have to.
That was my take.
Yeah.
is that something the building inspector actually does? Like, do they actually go measure the square footage of the buildings and calculate the area of the driveway that's impervious?
I don't think it's been an issue that's come up.
I can't imagine it actually happening. So, just want
to... Yeah.
But if he's following the regulations, then he would have to.
Right. I just didn't know if anyone ever did that. That's all.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, even in commercial, you have to have a certain amount that's not covered. So that's the intent. So I'll rework that one, and we'll see what we think more about it next time around. But that's the intent, to make sure that, you know, we recognize the fact that there's vegetation and ground underneath the solar panels so that we're not creating these big drainage swales and stuff, right? But that they put, I'm just making stuff up, they put, you know,
right,
crushed stone on the under the drip edge.
Yeah.
Right, so that it doesn't erode.
Erode, yeah.
That was kind of my intent with that second part of that. And then the first part was just, do we want to limit that, you know, limit the percentage of covered ground.
Yeah, you should see the old Kmart.
The old what?
The old Kmart. They put a lot of impervious of grass area.
Yeah, they did
in
out
the
back.
Parking lots,
yeah,
all over the place.
It looks like a little great go kart track back there.
The
it's this little
what?
Oval.
It looks
the old
Kmart.
Yeah.
Down the
Kmart.
Go into that parking lot. You're not gonna recognize it.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean,
that's a nice job.
Yeah, it looks nice.
All I saw were all the storage units you're talking
about. Can't do that there anymore. In the snow.
But that lot used to get flooded so badly all the time. I didn't see them doing lots of underground work there.
They did years ago. They changed that whole drainage system.
Okay.
Yeah, that's been fixed.
But I saw
remember when it all flooded too.
I saw a lot of young kids with their dads practicing driving cars and motorcycles out back behind the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And that's now gone. They were going to...
Yeah.
All right, so let's keep moving here so we can go home. Solar energy systems shall be located and or screened as to minimize visual impact on abutting properties and roads. The use of natural vegetation, if possible, is encouraged.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I made that one up.
There's a typo in the next line.
The next line?
Yeah,
I found it.
My number, yes.
Yes.
Off-site. Glade. Yeah, glade. It's not air freshener, glare. All right. So, you know, some towns actually put that the solar systems had to be have anti-reflective coatings on them and the like. And I just felt that was a little bit of an overreach, but
Well, I'm surprised that they don't, due to where certain flight paths are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that they don't have it, but I just thought that was a little weird. But I just, you know, I don't know if anybody has a problem with it. That was height not to exceed 20 feet. I think that's a fair number, mm-hmm. and that's everywhere. That's and several ones, including the energy company one there, talked about for, you know, mid to large solar arrays requiring fencing around them, which I think may not be a bad idea.
No, it helps with keeping the kids out and vandalism from happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I put that as a question mark. I didn't put any wording to it, but it didn't seem like a bad idea to me either.
I mean, plus you got places, I'm sure they're going to have a whole lot of this, some battery storage.
Fencing as appropriate.
Yeah, okay.
As appropriate. There you go.
Yeah. Mm.
I like it.
That's pretty loose.
Right open, hey?
It's who determines what's appropriate?
We do.
You like that.
Okay. But, so is it a certain number of square feet of panel surface that we will determine bigger than this?
I think more would, in my mind, would be because of the area that they're in for, like, screening purposes. Mm-hmm. Not so much for the safety part, but for screening purposes. For the rest of the area.
Yeah, we can work on that one and see what we come up with.
It's funny, you said fencing, and Brian's talking about
screening.
I'm thinking chain link fence, like Mark's mm-hmm. thinking, so.
Barrier security.
Right? Yeah, security, so it's.
That's why I said as appropriate.
It can be one and the same, too, right?
I guess, yeah.
And I'm thinking shrubs or like tall arborvitaes or something, so people don't see it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's...
Yeah, it all depends on what you're fencing. Fencing
is cheaper than a thousand arborvitaes, but...
Well, stuff like the golf course, I think the first week that they put theirs up, someone hit it with a golf ball purposely and ran off and cracked one of them.
No kidding.
Yeah. And, so anyway, you know, you get quite an investment in something like that.
I got to be honest, if I had a mid to large scale solar farm, I would fence the freaking thing and lock it. Got to be honest with you. Because I remember... what it's like, as we were talking earlier in the day,
Kevin,
I remember what it's like to be young and dumb.
Really? In 1978.
How about old and stupid?
My girlfriend had a $500 car, and she locked it, and I said, why do you lock it? So that I won't be disappointed in humankind. It's like, you know what? If I lock it, I won't be disappointed to come back.
Locks just keep honest people honest. That's all they do. If they want in, the lock ain't going to stop them.
Yeah. I had the best car lock system for a little while. I had a 67 Biscayne station wagon with three on the tree. We called it the winter wagon. It was a piece of crap. And the pin on the shift knob was, the shift lever was missing. So I just get out of my car, put the parking brake on, take the shifter with me.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a defensive tool as well. Abandonment and decommissioning. Within 12 months of the system's severance from the electrical utility grid, the owner shall remove all panels, anchors, pads, equipment, shelters, panels, and any other material used in the solar system. The site shall be restored to its natural condition. I didn't want to say original condition.
Yeah, because that might be bad.
Yeah, exactly. It may not be good.
That's right.
Put a ramshackle house on
the side. Yeah, exactly. Could have had 40 abandoned cars on it or something.
What happens if they go bankrupt?
Well, go to number two.
Okay.
To assure that the removal and restoration takes place and meets the town of Kandy's requirements, the town may require a performance guarantee. /bond/whatever word you want to put in there.
I can see that for the large ones, definitely.
Yeah.
Because, if they declare bankruptcy, they said, you know how things happen. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the money's gone.
Mm-hmm. Money's gone.
And so are the people.
Yeah, the people.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. All distribution lines associated with the system to meet... what the heck was that I say? When I hit to meet minimum... Oh,
To meet maximum extent.
Oh, to be placed underground? I don't know what the hell I was writing there.
Well, sometimes you can't do that. Sometimes you got to go overhead before you go underground.
Yeah, yeah, we did talk about that last time that you, we had to.
Yeah, you just come in with a drop pole and then you go underground.
Yeah. No, to the maximum extent possible. Practical, not possible. Practical, which is a better word.
Practical, yeah.
Be placed underground. So that would answer your...
Definitely underground.
Or practicable.
But you're practicable.
You may have to come off the system one or two poles just to get...
Practicable is different than practical.
Right?
You know that, yeah. Practicable is at all possible. Practical is... Yeah, it's easy enough to do. The only guy I've ever heard use that word other than me. No ground-mounted solar system shall be installed until a letter of acceptance from the utility company, which will receive the electric power from the system, is submitted to the town. Roof-mounted permits. Permits required for roof-mounted systems. They'll obviously need a building permit. They'll need an electrical permit. If it's a pool hot water one type thing, they'll need a plumbing permit and certification that the roof can accommodate the load required for the system may be required.
Sure.
And age of the roof.
What's that?
We should mention age of the roof.
That's actually all going to come under the building permit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but does it?
When he goes out, that's what he'd have to factor in, whether the roof is capable of supporting it.
Because you don't want to put brand new solar panels on a 10-year or 15-year roof.
I mean, do we really stop someone from doing it? But knowing that they probably have to change it in 10 years, like, it's pretty stupid. Yeah, fine,
it's
or whatever.
Their problem, really.
You can't regulate stupid.
No, nope.
Exactly.
Actually, by putting the panels on the roof, maybe they'll extend the
a lot of that.
Right, the life of the roof.
Yeah, that's right.
You're impervious.
Protecting
it's impervious.
Oh, boy.
You know, just caulking between the panels.
There
and,
you go.
Right. You can't regulate stupidity.
And basically the solar mount the roof mounted shall not exceed the roof by more than 10 inches, and
over the top, yeah.
Over the top, and it shall not be any larger than the exterior of the building. And exterior piping of electrical connections not located at the rear of the building shall be screened from the street to the extent practical.
Sounds good. Work.
Good work, Tim.
Well, that's where we're at. So I think we can get that done in another meeting or two. I really want to find some better wording for accessory use. And some better wording for residential stuff. Because I want to make sure we get it worded properly. That's all I got. Anybody got anything else?
Don't hang with me then. Like, smart people hate being talking to me because I'm like kryptonite. I suck them down to my level. Like,
motion to adjourn.
I'll suck at that.
All right. Second. So, all those in favor?
Aye.
So the